Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater, program 217 in the series. This is September 23rd, 2017. It's a Saturday. And to my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
We have Shante Garth in the booth. And Rob Martyr is doing the news for us tonight. So I appreciate that, Rob. And welcome, everyone. We have classic radio shows for you all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning. We're going to start things off with one of the best comedy shows of the golden age of radio and TV, the Burns and Allen Show, George Burns and Gracie Allen, with their special guest, Elizabeth Montgomery's dad, Robert Montgomery. Then we have Dimension X with the report on the Barnhouse effect. And then it's The Whistler with Money is the Root of All Evil. And that's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming comedy, The War with Grandpa, about a boy who devises a series of pranks to make his grandfather move out of his room.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great actor, I
might
add.
What do they win?
A Lumel Nani's gift certificate for $25.
Nice. All right. I could use a slice of spinach Lumel Nani's right about
I'm
now.
I'm with you.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. He played Jake LaMotta.
I don't know if I'm going to make it down to 155. I'm lucky I make it to 160. And on top of that, you signed me for a fight at 155. And if I don't make the 155, I lose $15,000.
That's right.
Oh! Oh,
Lisa. You signed me for a fight. If I don't lose that weight, I can't. Whatever he said. 312-981-7200. Who is that great actor? We'll find our winner after these words.
This is the WGN Radio Theater Show 217. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
I don't know if I'm going to make it down to 155. I'm lucky I make it to 160. And on top of that, you signed me for a fight at 155. And if I don't make the 155, I lose $15,000.
That's right.
Oh,
Lisa.
You love the accent. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Oh, wait a second. Hang on a second.
Where's Bob?
Where's Bob?
Hey.
Bob, are you there, Bob?
Yes, I am.
There he is. How are you?
Great. Love the show. Thank you.
Thank you. So who is that actor?
Robert De Niro.
Robert De Niro is right. And you know what you won?
Lumel Nani's.
Yes. The best $25 gift certificate for Lumel Nani's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at LumelNadis.com. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Bob. We hope that you enjoy your pizza and you hope you enjoy WGN.
Thank you, Lisa.
Take care.
Thanks, Bob. Take care.
Bye.
All right. Bob's a big winner. He won a Lumel Nani's gift certificate.
You know, he might share with us.
Yeah,
if we're really, really nice and we ask really, really nicely.
Yeah, maybe he'll send us a piece of it over here.
A piece.
I just want a spinach.
We can split a piece.
I love Lumel Nani's pizza.
I like all the vegetables. Just throw them on
my
there and
son,
send it over.
Pretty much every Saturday night when he's home and I'm here doing the show, he orders a Lumel Nani's pizza on my credit card.
Is there some left over when you get home?
Yeah, usually
that
is.
Tastes really good at 3 in the morning.
Pretty much every single Saturday he does that.
I'm a pizza fan, so you know.
Lumel Nani's, we love Lumel Nani's. And you know what? We love Burns and Allen. But before we get into Burns and Allen, I want to remind all of our listeners, we have a text in line. It's 312-981-7200. We love when you text us. Please text us. Ask us questions. We're happy to answer the questions. If there's certain radio shows you want to hear, that's a great way to do it. Let us know. But also, every Sunday, we have a contest. Right, Lisa?
Right. We want you to choose our favorite songs. We're on to 1978. But don't text in yet. We've got quite a few people who are starting now. It doesn't start yet. Wait till Sunday night, 11:05. Start texting, yeah, and we'll have some fun.
Like around this time tomorrow night.
Well, start at 11:05 because that's how we start it.
Right.
And we would be glad to deal with it then, but we can't do it tonight. I'm so sorry.
No, if you have texted in tonight, we cannot count any of those. You have to start at 11:05 tomorrow. Guess Lisa's favorite song, my favorite song, and Roger's favorite song from 1978.
And then we can decide who had the best favorite song.
Yeah, well, I did.
Because it won't be
I've
Carl.
Already decided.
It's never Roger, but okay.
It's time for Burns and Allen. Did you know that George Burns, Lisa, he won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor in The Sunshine Boys?
I remember.
Did you know that he then went on to star in the Oh God films?
He continued to work
until age 100.
Isn't that
God
amazing?
Bless him, right? And he had an unbelievably long career in vaudeville, radio, television, movies, along with his real-life wife, Gracie Allen. We have a radio broadcast from April 7th, 1949. This is called the Maxwell House Coffee Time. And their special guest is Robert Montgomery. Let's tune this in, part one of the Burns and Allen Show.
Another cup of Maxwell House coffee, George.
Sure, pour me a cup, Gracie.
You know, Maxwell House is always good to the last drop.
And that drop's good, too.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, transcribed in Hollywood and starring George Burns and Gracie Allen. With our special guest, Robert Montgomery, yours truly, Toby Reed, Viola Vaughn, Gail Gordon, Harry Lubin and the Maxwell House Orchestra, and Bill Goodwin.
For America's Thursday night comedy enjoyment, it's George and Gracie. And for America's everyday coffee drinking enjoyment, it's Maxwell House. Always good to the last drop.
Well, as we join the Burnses today, we find Gracie reading from her favorite section of the newspaper, the movie page.
George, look at me and kind of tilt your head to one side. That's it. Now grin.
What's the big idea?
Luella Parsons has a big article here about Robin Montgomery with a picture of them together. I was just comparing you two. There's a remarkable resemblance. When you grin like that, you look just like Luella Parsons.
Hedda Hopper will be jealous. I thought you meant I looked like Robert Montgomery.
Oh, you look better than Montgomery.
Better?
Well, certainly, and more mature. Robert Montgomery is cute in a boyish sort of a way, but you look like you've lived. Live.
Okay, hold it. I'm mature.
Yeah. You know, to a woman, Robert Montgomery looks just like a great big mischievous boy.
A mischievous boy.
Yes. In fact, the girls in my club voted him the juvenile they'd most like to be with when he's delinquent.
Voting.
You know, he's got sort of a devilish twinkle in his eye.
I haven't got that twinkle, huh?
Well, yours has settled down to more of a reddish glow.
Well, I'm nice to have around in case you lose something. What does the article say about Montgomery?
Oh, it says he's going to produce, direct, and star in a new picture. And it'll be financed by a Texas oil millionaire.
Oh, probably McCarthy, who built that hotel in Houston. They say he's worth $200 million.
McCarthy is worth $200 million?
That's right.
And just think, he used to get 50 cents a week from Bergen.
Gracie.
$200 million. And you try to tell me he was a dummy.
This is a different McCarthy. This is Glenn McCarthy.
Oh.
Does it say what picture Montgomery is going to make?
Oh, yes, it's the story of Napoleon and Josephine. I wonder which one he'll play.
Sam Newman. Probably Josephine.
Yeah. Oh, no. It says he's bringing an actress from France to play the part of Josephine. Now, isn't that silly?
Why?
Well, there are so many fine actresses right here who could do it. Betty Davis, Jane Wyman, Ingrid Bergman, any one of us.
I mean, any one of you girls.
Come in.
Howdy, little lady. Howdy, little man.
Well, look, George, it's Mr. Judson, our dear friend from Texas.
Well, we haven't seen you for a long time, Mr. Judson. How's everything down in Texas?
If you don't mind, I'd prefer you to say how's everything up in Texas.
Why?
Heaven is up, ain't it?
I made a blunder. Well, what brings you down to California?
Well, I'm thinking... I'm thinking of putting $1 million into one of them moving pictures. It's going to be made by a young fella named Robert Montgomery.
Oh, so you're the Texan we read about. We thought it was Glenn McCarthy.
Who? Glenn McCarthy. Surely you know him. He's got $200 million.
No, no, I don't mingle much with the poor Texans.
Murder.
I just had a talk with this Robert Montgomery, and he seems like a right nice fella for a foreigner.
Bob's not a foreigner.
No? Well, he sure don't talk like a Texas boy.
Mr. Judson, there are 47 states in this country that aren't a part of Texas.
I know. Pitiful, ain't it?
You were interested in movies.
Oh, and this is my daughter's idea. It's her money.
The whole million?
Yeah, yeah. The other day, she busted open her piggy bank.
Well, she's a Texas girl.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
From up in Texas.
Yeah, that's right. Now, Mrs. Burns, if you think I should invest this money, I'll do it. I trust your judgment, little lady, you being from the outskirts of Dallas.
She's from San Francisco.
Yeah, I said the outskirts.
Oh, yeah.
Tell Mr. Montgomery I'm leaving this check with you. And if you think he'll make a good picture, you give it to him.
All right.
Well, I got to get back to Texas and help my wife take care of things. She's riding the range.
Wouldn't it be cooler riding a horse?
Wouldn't it be cooler riding... Yeah.
A great responsibility that Mr. Judson has given me. I wish you were making the picture instead of Robert Montgomery. You're so talented.
Well, I'm not making the picture. That would ruin Judson's investment.
What's an investment?
Well, skip it. You don't understand business.
I do, too. Now, tell me.
Well, an investment is something that costs you money, but you don't always get the money back. Now, do you understand, my little businesswoman?
Yes, my little investment.
Drop this whole subject, Grace.
Oh, but George, you can act circles around Robert Montgomery.
Oh, stop. Remember him in Nightmare's Ball when he carried that head around in a hat box? He scared the daylights out of people.
Well, sure, but George, he had to carry somebody else's head around to do it.
Yes, I'm pretty. Look, Gracie, I'm going to the cigar store. When Bob Montgomery comes for his check, give it to him, understand?
Yes, dear.
Okay.
Yes?
How do you do? I'm Robert Montgomery.
Come in, Mr. Montgomery. Come in.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I was told I'd find $1 million waiting for me here.
That's right.
Well, this is rather like the end of the rainbow, isn't it? May I see the pot?
He went to the cigar store. Didn't call my husband back.
No, no, I wasn't referring to your husband. I was merely asking for the check that Mr. Judson left with you.
Oh, well, there's plenty of time for that. Let's visit a little. How is your wife, Dinah Shaw?
No, no, no. No, I'm Robert Montgomery. Dinah Shore is married to George.
No. I'm married to George. Dinah Shore is married to you. She's Mrs. Montgomery, remember?
Yes, but she's a different Mrs. Montgomery.
Well, all right, but that's no reason to forget her. Lots of people say I'm different, too.
Yes, I'll bet they do. Now, look, I am married, and I have two children, and...
Well, how nice.
But I have only met Dinah Shore casually.
Oh, come now. I'm not as young and innocent as I look.
In fact, I'm beginning to look a little older myself.
Now, suppose we start all over again. How is your wife, Dinah Shaw?
She's fine, thanks.
Well, that's better.
Now, could I please have the check I needed to start production?
Start production? I thought you had two children.
Oh, no. I mean production on the picture.
Oh! Well, I've got to be very careful, you know. $1 million is a lot of money.
Yes, Mrs. Burns, that's a nice round figure.
Well, thanks, but keep your mind on business. Now, I want to know just what the money will be spent for.
Well, of the $1 million, approximately a quarter will be spent on salaries, a quarter on exploitation, and a half on production costs.
That's only $1. Now, what about the rest of it?
Look, Mrs. Burns,
Come, Mr. Montgomery. What do you think this is sitting on my shoulders, a pumpkin?
How many guesses do I get? Please, Mrs. Burns, may I have the check?
Well, there's just one other thing.
Oh, no.
I'd like my husband to play the lead in the picture.
But I'm playing the lead. It's the part of Napoleon.
Well, my husband can play Napoleon.
No, I bet he can at that. How long has he been married to you?
15 years.
I bet he thinks he is Napoleon.
Him for the picture. He's tied up.
I hope he doesn't break loose.
And besides, Uncle Fred's kind of dopey looking. Oh, scare people if you put him in a picture. You see...
Gracie did... Oh, hello, Mr. Montgomery.
Glad to meet you, Uncle Fred.
Oh, no. This is my husband, George.
Is this the man you want to play Napoleon?
Yeah, that's right.
Just when we're getting along so well with France?
What goes on here?
Your wife refuses to give me Mr. Judson's check unless you can play the lead in my picture.
Gracie, I told you to forget that nonsense. Now hand over the check.
No, I won't do it.
Well, then I'll have to force your hand open and take it.
Oh, now, please, George, no violence.
It's the only way. Okay, young lady, you asked for it. You try it, Bob.
No, George, I could never use force upon a lady so lovely, so young. So beautiful.
Oh, Mr. Montgomery.
Now, may I have the check?
No, but keep trying.
I know how to make this delicate hand surrender its treasure. I shall kiss each lovely finger like this.
Mm.
And this.
Oh.
And this.
Oh.
By golly, it worked. She's taking the check out of her hand.
Oh, don't get excited. I'm just putting it in my mouth. There's no use wasting that on my hand.
I give up.
That's the first portion of the Burns and Allen Show. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolfe.
All right, welcome back to the show. I'm Carl Amari. Lisa to my right, Shante in the booth, and Rob Martier doing the news tonight. And we're tuning in to the Burns and Allen Show. Let's go back to April 7th, 1949. Their special guest is Robert Montgomery. Here's the conclusion to the Burns and Allen Show.
Bob, there's only one way to get that check from Gracie. Let me be in your picture.
Oh, but George...
Now look, I don't mean as the lead... Just give me a little walk-on part. That'll satisfy Gracie.
You know, that's an idea. All right, you can be Pierre, one of Napoleon's soldiers.
Swell. What about my lines?
Well, don't worry about those, George. We'll hide those with makeup.
Yeah, well, let's go and tell Gracie. We'll hide them with makeup.
Well, Mrs. Burns, you win. Your husband will be in the picture.
Well, I'll help Topham rehearses part, Mr. Montgomery.
Now, that won't be necessary. George, can you say we?
We.
He's rehearsed.
This can get me an Oscar.
And now, Mrs. Burns, may I have that check?
Well, I'll bring it to the studio tomorrow.
Well, Robert Montgomery made a big mistake when he left the script of his picture with Gracie, as he discovers the next morning when George and Gracie report to the studio.
Well, Mrs. Burns, did you bring the check?
Yes, and you can have it as soon as we run through George's big scene.
Oh, but George is Pierre. He doesn't have a big scene.
Oh, he does now. He has a big love scene with Josephine, and then he marries her.
No, that's Napoleon who does that. You haven't read your history.
You haven't read your script.
You can't change Montgomery's script.
But, George, it gives you a big scene.
It makes no difference.
You sing to Josephine.
It makes no... I sing?
Yes. A little French song.
Oh. Well, this for you and that for me and this for your papa. La, 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 la. La, 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 la.
Oh, isn't he wonderful? Isn't he wonderful? So far.
Well, it's nauseating.
I know you'd like it. And it's a wonderful thing for you, too. You have some great dramatic lines to speak.
I have?
Uh-huh. When you come home from battle and find Josephine with Pierre, you fly into a rage and say, "Oh, Josephine, you have made me so lame, miserable."
Josephine, you have made me so les miserable.
Why, you speak French as well as I do.
Thank you.
And then you draw your sword and strike Pierre dead, shouting, "Death to the traitor, vive la France."
Oh, death to the traitor, vive la France.
And then comes your greatest moment of all. You stand over Pierre's body and sing the stirring strains of the Marseillaise.
And aux enfants de la patrie. Oh, say, I like this scene. Let's run through the scene once.
All right. Here's the script, Mr. Montgomery. Now, I'll read Josephine's lines, and we'll start where Napoleon Bonaparte knocks on her door. Who is it?
It is I, Bonaparte.
Oh, Pierre, my lover. It is the Emperor.
Mon Dieu.
What will he say?
He will say, "Oh, Josephine, you have made me so les miserable." That's what he will say.
Mon Dieu.
Who is it?
Tis I, Bonaparte.
Oh, Pierre, my lover, what will we do?
He will draw his sword and strike me dead, shouting, "Death to the traitor. Vive la France." That's what he will do.
Yes, but when? She's I, Bonaparte.
Oh, Pierre, my lover. What will he do after he strikes you dead?
He will stand over my body and sing the Marseillaise. Allons, allons, on, on. Allons, on, on. Allons, on. This for you, that for me. That's what he will do.
Who is it?
His eye, Bone. Bone?
Yeah. I haven't got a part.
I don't think he's happy, Gracie.
Well, of course not. You two have all the line.
We also have the check.
Oh, yes. I'll tell you what let's do. Let's leave this whole thing up to Mademoiselle Colette.
Oh, isn't she the French actress who's going to play Josephine?
That's right. If she would prefer to do her love scenes with George, he will be the star. If she prefers me, so be it. The better lover will win.
Oh, Mr. Montgomery, you fool, you. George has forgotten more about love than you'll ever know.
He has?
Yes, and I wish he'd remembered some of it.
I'd never get that in.
They used to call him Volcano Lip Burn. Of course, he's been quiet for a lot of years now. But that's when a volcano is dangerous. He might see Colette and blow his top.
Gracie, I don't think Colette will choose me. I'm not as young as Montgomery.
Oh, so what? The French like their wine aged and their cheese ripe. They feel the same way about men, you're in. Montgomery hasn't got a chance.
Let's go find Colette.
Yes, yes. Cherchez la femme.
See, he's giving up already.
This is Colette's dressing room. I told her to hide here and not let anyone see her.
What for?
Well, Gracie, this girl is so beautiful that I don't dare let her walk around the lot. Every wolf in Hollywood would be after her.
Gee.
Thank goodness the wolves haven't discovered her yet. She only arrived from France yesterday.
Yes, what is it?
Well, gee, she looks a lot like Bill Goodwin, doesn't she?
That is Bill Goodwin.
Bill... Bill, let us in.
Colette, honey, were you expecting visitors?
But no, mon cher.
Get lost. Just a minute. Colette, it's me, the boss.
Oh, Monsieur Montgomery, a thousand pardons. Come in, come in.
I'd like to have you meet Mr. and Mrs. Burns.
How do you do?
Banjua.
Oh, je suis enchanté.
Mondou. Bill.
Yes, Bob.
This girl just arrived from France yesterday. How did you get a date with her so fast?
Oh, you know, the usual line. How about a date, you doll?
And that did it?
Well, sure, I couldn't refuse her.
Well, she whistled at you.
Well, Natch. I took her out and showed her the town last night.
Oh, yes. Hollywood is a strange place. So dark and no buildings. Nothing but trees and benches.
We spent some time in Griffith Park.
Well, mon dieu.
Oh, I love America. Everything is so different. It is the first time I have ever tasted hot champagne.
Hot champagne?
Yes, Bill made it himself. It was the finest vintage, called Maxwell House 28.
Maxwell House 28?
Well, we had 28 cups.
Oh.
You see, once Colette tasted the rich, mellow flavor of Maxwell House coffee, she just couldn't get enough. She said it was like, what was that word she used?
Nectar?
Well, I kissed her a couple of times. The coffee. Yes, I told her that Maxwell House is America's favorite brand of coffee. Always good to the last drop.
But there are three things that Bill just keeps talking about all the time. Oh, I'm so anxious to see them. They must be the three great wonders of America.
Well, they're probably the skyscrapers, the automobiles, and the supermarkets.
No, he called them the Medellins, Manizales, and Bucaramangas.
Those are choice Latin American coffees, Colette, and when they're expertly blended and radiant roasted to the peak of flavor perfection, you've got the ultimate in coffee drinking pleasure. Maxwell House.
Now, Bill, I hate to interrupt your tete-a-tete with Colette, but she has a very important decision to make.
Oh, what is that, Monsieur Montgomery?
Would you prefer to play your love scenes with Mr. Burns here or with me?
Are you kidding?
No.
I think somebody is, how you say, pulling my leg.
Bill, let go of a leg.
Gracie, that's just an expression.
Well, let go of her leg anyway. Now, Colette, take a good look at Mr. Burns. What do you think?
Oh, c'est l'homme le plus drôle que j'ai jamais vu.
Laissez-vous.
Oh, Monsieur Ben, il a l'air d'un imbécile. Un jerk.
Now, George, do you understand what they're saying?
No, I've never been across the pond.
Right now, I think you're up the creek.
I'm not a hit, huh?
You know, I think Mademoiselle Colette is ready to announce her decision.
Oh, before you do, Colette, may I see you alone for a moment?
Oh, certainement. Step right in the next room.
Colette, there are a few things that you should know about Mr. Burns, or as they call him in your country, the Liberator of Paris.
What?
Well, sit down and I'll tell you about it. Now, single-handed, he wiped out 30 Panzer divisions and turned the tide of the war.
Monsieur Montgomery?
Oui.
I have decided to play the love scenes with Monsieur Burns.
You have?
Yes. Madame Burns said he was in the underground for many years.
I wonder why she dug him up.
Underground?
Well, you can start the rehearsals, Mr. Montgomery.
Yes. Oh, say, Mrs. Burns, why don't you stay and watch your husband do a scene with Colette? The kind of a scene that he'll be doing for the next 6 weeks.
All right.
Colette, take George in your arms.
Avec passion, baby. Avec adieu. Beaucoup toujours.
Oui, oui, oui. Ah, my love. Oh, you are so strong. So handsome. Ooh, so magnifique. I want to hug you.
Oh, not so hard. You're hurting me.
And now, Cherie, we kiss.
Hey, cut.
But this is Burns. This is Burns. They'll be doing this night and day.
Over my dead body. And George's too. He can't stand it.
Oh, I don't know. Help me up, somebody.
Here's the check, Mr. Montgomery. You'll just have to struggle through the picture without George.
Did you hear that, Colette? Isn't it a shame?
Yes. Trey Kelly.
Good night, everybody.
If you like good things the easy way, good things the easy way, Instant Max will have that for you. Good, good coffee that's easy too. No time, no trouble, no grounds, no pot, and it's good to the very last, you know what.
Yes, Instant Maxwell House means great coffee instantly in your cup. Here's real instant coffee. All pure Maxwell House coffee in instant form. Enjoy instant Maxwell House. Instantly.
Good to the very last, you know what.
Robert Montgomery will soon be seen in his new comedy, Come Be My Love, with Anne Blythe and Jane Carl. Until next Thursday, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's favorite brand of coffee. Always good to the last drop. The George Burns and Gracie Allen Show was transcribed in Hollywood and written by Paul Henning and Keith Fowler.
Stay tuned for that fascinating game with words, the program where you learn while you listen. Noah Webster Says, next on NBC.
Hey,
all right, that is the Maxwell House Coffee Time, also known as the George Burns and Gracie Allen Show from April 7th, 1949. The KNX was kind of cut off at the end there, but that was an NBC broadcast that was sponsored by Maxwell House Coffee. Always good to
the last drop.
The last drop, right, Lisa? And a great cast in there. You had Robert Montgomery as a guest star, Viola Vaughn, Gail Gordon. You had Bill Goodwin doing the announcing. Of course, George Burns and Gracie Allen starring. And just a terrific show. Hope you enjoyed it. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, Lisa, you know what?
What?
We have 1 hour down, two more to go, and we have two more classic radio shows to present to our listeners. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night, folks, all the way till 2 a.m., 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. We play six classic radio shows over the Saturday and Sunday program. And in hour two, which is coming up in 5 minutes, we'll have Dimension X, a good show from 1950. We haven't played a sci-fi show in a while, have we?
No, but yeah. I'm telling you, people are loving that we played a comedy tonight.
They like Burns and Allen.
Yep.
That's for sure.
Of course, The Whistler's coming up in hour three, so hang in there for that.
Yep. And then what do we have tomorrow? Let's look here.
Well, tomorrow, which is almost tonight.
Right. Oh, Boston Blackie. My favorite.
And we've got an Eddie Cantor show.
Right. We have Boston Blackie, Eddie Cantor, and then we have a very interesting mystery show called Cabin B-13, written by John Dixon Carr. It was a short-lived show. It was only on for like one season, but it was a good mystery, really good mystery. It was about a guy who was a ship doctor. He was on a ship, and he was a kind of a strange dude. It was almost like The Mysterious Traveler, only he was on a ship, the Moravania ship in docked in England. And then he was in cabin B-13,
right?
Which made sense. And then he would talk about some murder or something that happened on the ship or whatever.
Right.
It was cool.
Like a Dateline episode.
It's a cool show. Actually, I was watching Dateline.
I was watching
Were you watching it too?
Yes, that's why I
You were watching it also?
I was.
That was a. I had to leave though. I didn't get to watch.
I didn't get to finish it either.
Really, it was.
I stopped halfway through. I had to get ready to go.
It's about the guy who was a pathologist or something like that.
I was
watching.
I
like Dateline.
I didn't finish it.
Wow, we were watching the same show.
Yeah, but not together.
No, you were in one city and I was in the other city. All right. So coming up, we have Dimension X and then The Whistler, and I want to remind all of our listeners that we have a text in line 312-981-7200. That is the number to text in any questions you have about the show or
comments,
you know,
jokes. We love to hear from you, I try to write back to you.
Yeah, Lisa reads them to me because I have trouble reading.
So I read aloud.
Actually, because I've got buttons to push here.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I mean, Shante does most of the button pushing.
All of them.
But I have faders. I have buttons I have to push.
Yeah.
I have to watch the clock. I have to look at how many commercials are coming up.
It's just a lot of reading and pushing buttons.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It really
is,
Lisa.
It's a lot of work for you.
And then I have to...
Well, what would you do without me, Carl?
I'll tell you this. It's not as much fun here without you.
No, I know.
Because you are fun.
Oh, I know.
Lisa's middle name is Fun. Lisa Fun Wolf.
We had some fun this week together.
Oh, yeah.
I just really quickly, I want to mention that during the week, I went with a couple of people. It was a WGN Radio Recess event to the Fred Astaire Ballroom.
I did not go
this
to
one,
that.
It was in the West Loop in Chicago.
Ballroom dancing.
And I had ballroom dance lessons. Mm. I check it out. There's some pictures on our Facebook page, and you can get more information. There's a website and a Twitter. Yesterday, we went to the House of Torment.
Yeah, now that I went to.
In Morton Grove.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of fun being
that was
scared.
Cool. Yeah.
It was opening night, so Halloween's around the corner. And that was the first time I've been to a haunted house.
Did you say it's in Morton Grove?
I did say that.
House of Torment in Morton Grove. It's really, folks, you know what? It's really cool. And it's, you go through sort of two haunted houses.
Yep.
There's two
in one.
Yeah. And it takes a long time to get through it. And it's dark and gooey and scary and eerie and
fun. It's just fun to be scared.
It was fun because some of the other WGN personalities were there, and we had a good time. And do you have pictures up of that, too?
I have pictures up of that, too.
And we did a video, so that'll be up at some point.
Yeah, I'll post it when it
is. It was a lot of fun.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Rob. And it is about 7 minutes after midnight here, hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa Wolf to my right here. And Lisa, you know what?
What?
We have Dimension X, a good outer space radio show, but it's an adult sci-fi show. You know, there's a lot of kids shows back in the good old days. Like, you know, they had Space Patrol and they had, you know, these, you know, kind of kids, Flash Gordon, things like that. Well, this was really for an adult audience, right?
Which is why we would be playing that on this show.
I mean, it was really kind of drama, you know, sci-fi drama. We have a great episode in this hour called The Report on the Barnhouse Effect from 1950 that's coming your way. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming drama, Same Kind of Different as Me, about an art dealer who must befriend a dangerous homeless man in order to save his marriage.
And
now, maybe that was your problem. You needed to befriend a dangerous homeless man. Didn't work for you.
No, there was nobody. There's not very many homeless people out where that I could have, you know, enlisted to help me with that.
Well, you could probably walk out of Michigan Avenue and pick up quite a few.
I could find some out there.
The winner is going to get a pair of tickets to see Tony and Tina's wedding at Chicago Theater Works.
All right. Tony and Tina's wedding.
Yes.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. And here's a hint. This actor played Bob Crane in Autofocus.
It's a critical time for me. I need something big.
This was a great movie.
Did you see this movie? No.
Oh, man. This is a great movie. He did such a great
job.
But
I like this actor.
Playing Bob Crane in this movie. Amazing. All right. Give us a call if you know who that great actor is. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play that movie clip one more time.
It's a critical time for me. I need something big.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Yes.
Hi.
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Who is that actor? You obviously recognize him.
Greg Kinnear.
Greg Kinnear's right. Did you see Autofocus? Because I'm giving Carl a hard time about that movie.
No, I've never seen it, but I've read about it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. I think only Carl has seen it.
Yeah, I'm
but
the
he
only
said it's a great
movie,
so
seen it.
We're going to trust
Martin.
Him on that.
Probably. I'm the only person.
I think that's true, actually.
Okay.
But anyhow, Mark, you are a winner. You've won two tickets to see Tony and Tina's wedding. It's at the Chicago Theater Works. It's a great comedy show. It's, I don't know if you know about it, if you've seen it. It's an evening of nuptials for two Italian-American families. The audience is participatory in the ceremony and the reception. For showtimes and tickets, visit TonyLovesTina.com. Thank you so much for calling in. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Take care, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. All right, Tony and Tina's wedding, huh?
Yeah.
They get married every single night.
You know, this show has been so long-running, but, you know, the cast changes, but the show has been such a long-running show here in Chicago, very successful.
Well, here's the thing. They get married every night, which is not so great, but there's a honeymoon every night then. That's good.
Yeah,
that
was well
that
worth
good.
The...
Yeah.
That was
well,
worthy.
I mean, you got the wedding you got to suffer through, but then you got the honeymoon.
And then that's over, and then what? The honeymoon is over. doomsday here.
Bomb.
Debbie Downer.
All right. Okay, it's time for Dimension X, Lisa. Radio's premier series of adult science fiction. Premiered in 1950 over NBC, and George Lefferts and Ernest Canoy adapted stories from Astounding Science Fiction magazine. They took stories from Ray Bradbury and Isaac Asimov, Frederick Brown, Robert Heinlein, and they made radio scripts out of them. And then they broadcast them on Dimension X. Not bad, right? Norman Rose was the announcer on this. He was sort of the host. And later he was the voice of Juan Valdez, the fictitious coffee grower in the Columbia Coffee TV commercials. Did you know that? I think you did know that.
Only because we've talked about that. So
right.
I'm learning as I go.
So very good. All right. This is a story by Kurt Vonnegut Jr. called The Report on the Barnhouse Effect. Let's go back to April 22nd, 1950 for part one now of Dimension X.
Adventures in time and space told in future tense.
Dimension X.
The mind of man is still an unprobed field. Within it lie many mysteries still unsolved. But there are men today, psychologists now experimenting with telepathy, hypnosis, thought transference, who believe that in the future we may discover the existence of a force of the mind more powerful than any force the world has ever known. We go ahead now in time some 10 years, and in space to the campus of a small eastern college. The hour is late, and in one of the dark college buildings, two men stand in front of a door that bears the name Professor Arthur Barnhouse, Psychology.
Well, here you are, Clinton.
Thank you, Major.
Here are the keys to the professor's desk and files. I guess you inherit everything now. You might as well dictate a full report while everything's still fresh in your mind. I'll wait and see you home.
Oh, no, that isn't necessary. I'll be all right.
You sure? After what's happened tonight, we wouldn't want you to have an accident, too.
Major, after what happened tonight, I have a hunch the whole world is ripe for an accident.
I'm afraid you're right, Clinton. Well, good night.
Good night.
Oh, pull yourself together, Buster. Easy does it.
August 21st, 1960. Restricted report from George Clinton to the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, the FBI, National Security Board, etc., etc., etc. Subject, the so-called Barnhouse effect, and Professor Arthur Barnhouse, who discovered it. I first met the professor 2 years ago in the fall of 1958. He was a professor of psychology here at Wilton College, and I was here on an instructor's fellowship in the psych department. They assigned me to be Barnhouse's assistant, and he needed one. He hardly ever remembered to go to a class, and he didn't seem to do anything else either. For 3 months, I watched him sitting at the desk here in his study. He'd either stare at nothing for hours or fall asleep, nodding over his mess of papers. I couldn't understand it, and it was none of my business. But one day, I thought I'd better give him a shake.
What?
I said it's 2:15, Professor. Don't you want to go to your 2 o'clock class?
Don't you want to mind your own business?
I beg your pardon.
Sorry, Clinton. Forgive me. I don't know what gets into me. Forget the class. The kids would rather be outdoors anyway.
Okay, Professor. In that case, I'm sorry I woke you up.
It's all right. I just can't seem to get my sleeping done at night. Clinton, what do you know about the international situation?
Well, I'm no political scientist, if that's what you mean. I read the papers when I have time.
Well, that's the way I've always been. Lately, I've had to look into it. I stay up nights looking into it.
Professor, I don't want you to take this personally or anything, but... Well, sir, I wonder if you'd mind if I asked to be transferred.
You mean you'd rather work with somebody else in the department?
Oh, no, sir, it's not that. I think maybe there's a chance for a psychologist to work on that government project.
Government project? Oh, yes, that army thing.
Yes, sir. They're trying to develop robot pilots for the new fighter rockets so they'd be expendable.
Oh, yes. Something else designed to replace men.
Yes, sir. And you know, it's a funny thing. The robots work just like human brains. They get overworked or overloaded or something, and they have nervous breakdowns. Now, if I could only find out what drives those electronic brains crazy, why, I'd feel
Clinton,
that I was...
If you want to study a brain that's going crazy, never mind the robots, you can go to work on me.
What are you talking about, sir?
I don't know. I'm either crazy as a bedbug or a... Clinton... I wish you'd help me find out.
Are you serious, Professor?
I never was more serious in my life. I'm afraid I'm going out of my mind.
But why? What makes you think so?
This is what makes me think I'm crazy.
Those dice?
Clinton, do you know what the odds are against my rolling a 7?
Oh, about 5 or 6 to 1.
What? 7. Now, what are the odds against my rolling it again?
Twice in a row? Plenty. About 100 to 1, I'd say.
Watch.
Professor, you're hotter than a $2 pistol.
That's funny. That's what they said 8 years ago when I first discovered this.
Discovered what?
This force of the mind. I call it dynamo psychism.
You mean you shove those dice around just by thinking about it?
People have always thought there could be a force of the mind. You know that. Fortunately or unfortunately, I've learned to control it.
Yeah? How did you happen to find out about this, Professor?
Well, it was about 10 years ago, back in 1948. I made the mistake of going to a psychologist's convention, and in order not to appear unsocial, I happened to find myself, for the first and only time in my life, in a dice game.
What happened?
I didn't have the faintest idea what was expected of me, and someone told me to roll sevens. So I did. 10 of them.
I bet you weren't asked back into that game.
That night, in my room, I realized that it simply couldn't have been an accident, Clinton. I tried to reconstruct the exact scene, the position of my body, and finally, the thoughts in my mind. And that was what did it. I remembered what had been my train of thought, and I proceeded to roll sevens, not 10 consecutive times, but 50.
Oh, brother, there it is again. Professor, can you do anything else? I mean, besides shove dice around?
You see that inkwell on my desk?
Sure.
Watch it. Don't take your eyes off it. If nothing happens, say so, and I shall go quietly, even happily, to the nearest sanitarium.
Okay, Professor, shoot. Hey. Why, it just blew up.
Yes. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to splash ink on your suit.
That's okay, Professor. What was that funny noise?
Oh, that... The dynamo psychic waves are a little like ultra-high-frequency waves. Sometimes, when I turn on the power, they create a kind of static.
Listen, Professor, how much power have you got? Could you blow up anything, well, you know, big?
I could flatten the Great Wall of China.
Boy, you'll make the helio-oxygen bomb look sick.
That's what scares me, Clinton. The thought that maybe I could use this power to save the world. Clinton, you've got to help me.
Who, me? Professor, when it comes to international relations, I don't know from where. You'd better get in touch with the State Department.
State Department? Yes, they'd be the ones, wouldn't they? Well, you probably want to be getting home now. I'll see you to the door. I could use a breath of fresh air.
Okay, Professor. You better stop brooding about this. You get somebody else to do your worrying for you.
Yes, yes, you're right. I have been brooding, wondering what to do. Just sitting and staring endlessly at that awful monstrosity across the way.
You mean the old bell tower?
Yes, I've gotten so I can't stand the sight of it anymore.
Professor, look, what... Oh, there's nothing left but a pile of rubble.
Oh, my, I didn't really mean to do that. Well, you see, Clinton, it's got to the point where my lightest whim is more dangerous than a blockbuster.
Professor, you get in and write that letter to the State Department right now. You packed too much of a wallop. Professor Barnhouse mailed his letter and things happened fast. The long arm of the Army reached out, and within 5 days, the two of us were deposited in an old mansion in Virginia, surrounded with a barbed wire fence and 20 guards... and labeled top secret. As soon as they'd seen a couple of small demonstrations, they set up a big test of dynamo psychism, and the professor was a very important guy. You could see him getting more unhappy every day.
General Barker, I've got to talk to you.
Just a minute, Professor. We're cleaning up the last details in Operation Brainwave. We'll roll at 1,400 hours tomorrow.
At 1,400 what?
2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Robot controlled fighter rockets will take off at exactly 1400 minus 10 and appear over the target at 1400. Watching from here over the video screen, you will then try to knock all 20 of them out of the sky. Think you can do it?
Of course I can do it.
Fine. But... and we've taken care of everything.
Everything except that you neglected to ask me if I wanted to do it. I don't. This whole thing strikes me as childish and insanely expensive.
We'll decide about that.
But what's the good of it? I wouldn't mind acting as a defense weapon if it were necessary. But I can make all wars and armaments unnecessary. I could give every nation what it needs. I could move mountains, build roads, dig irrigation canals. I have a technique which costs nothing and can do immense good. You're spending millions to prove that it can do immense damage. It doesn't make sense.
You know something, General? He's right.
Of course I'm right. I want you to send me and Clinton back to Wilton College. Right away.
That's quite impossible, Professor. This operation has gone too far to be called off now.
Yes, but...
Even if we wanted to call it off, If your dynamo psychism really works, you're apt to be the key to our entire defense setup.
But listen...
You'll have to excuse me now. Major Cuthrell and I have to double-check the confidential list of the observers on this end. Have you got it, Major?
Yes, General. It's right here. Alberts, Barker, Bernstein, Carter, Clinton, Cuthrell, Holbrook, Lawrence, Stein, Williams.
Check. I guess that includes everybody of importance.
What about me?
What? That's taken for granted, Professor.
Thanks.
1,400 hours. Will you be ready?
I'll be ready. And now, if someone will wind the restricted clock and put the confidential cat out, I'm going to bed.
YDR to brainwave control. Observation plane to brainwave control. Come in, please.
That's McKinley in the observation plane. Cut me in. Hello, McKinley. Reading you clear on the speaker. Everything all right?
All okay, General. Takeoff uneventful. Fighter rockets now flying on course in perfect formation. Altitude 5,000 feet. Airspeed 865. Visibility unlimited. Are you tracking us?
We've got you on radar. Haven't picked you up on the video screen yet. What's your estimated time of arrival over the target?
ETA, 2 minutes.
Check. Remember, McKinley, the observation plane is not to enter the target range. Veer off and circle at the 10-mile limit. Bring the rockets overhead by remote control.
Check. Observation signing off.
1 minute, 45 seconds to go, Professor Barnhouse. Are you in good shape?
I'm all right, General.
Good. You can all take our places in front of the video screen now. You sit here, Professor. Center. Major Cuthrell, will you turn on the video screen?
Right, General. Nothing yet, just empty sky. Hold it. I hear him coming in.
There are 20 of them, Professor. You think you can knock them down at this altitude?
Distance has nothing to do with it.
I don't want anything to go wrong. You're sure you feel all right?
General, I know I can do it. If that's all that's worrying you, let's call the whole thing off and save $20 million.
There they are. They're coming in.
Get ready, Professor. 10 seconds. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now, wide open, Professor. Well, go ahead, Barnhouse. Knock them down.
I did.
Nonsense. All you've done is blank out the video screen. What went wrong? Did you give it everything you had?
I was wide open, General.
But it didn't work. They're still flying. What's that?
It just took a few seconds to work.
Holy smoke, they're dropping like flies.
McKinley, the brainwave control. Look, what's happened to these rockets? They're going down like flames.
By heaven, it works. It really works. Cuthrell, get Washington on the line. Barnhouse, I want you to... Hey. Hey, where's Barnhouse?
He was right here.
Clinton, where's the professor?
Got me, General. We were all staring at the video. He must have walked out.
Get moving, everybody. Alert the guard. Search the house.
Yes, sir.
If anything happens to that man...
General Barker. General Barker.
What is it, Corporal?
Corporal Gray, guard at the main gate. Sir, Professor Barnhouse is gone.
Gone? Where?
He came tearing out of the gate at 40 miles an hour. Here's a note, sir. Threw it out of the car as it went by. I picked it up.
Let me see it, quick. What the... What got into that man?
What does he say, General?
Gentlemen, as the first superweapon with a conscience, I'm removing myself from your national defense stockpile. Setting a new precedent in the behavior of ordnance, I have humane reasons for going off. Signed, Arthur Barnhouse.
All right, that's the first portion of Dimension X. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, we're back. Thanks, Roger.
You're very welcome.
Hi, Carol. Roger. Good morning.
Well, hi. Good morning, everybody.
And you know what?
What?
Roger has picked out his songs till 2011.
Yes.
Was it?
He's
actually
good.
I picked it out until 2024.
So I've got that whole list, and
you're missing 2 years.
Well, we'll be playing our music game tonight at 11:05.
Yeah. What year is it again?
1978.
What
year is it? Roger's a little confused.
I wish it was 1978.
I wish it was 1978,
right now.
Too.
Wow. Oh, I'd be 15. Wow. Oh.
I'd be two.
Be great. You'd be 14.
Two.
Lisa would be 14, and
no,
I'd be 15.
I would not.
78.
And Roger would.
I would have been would, 26.
Oh, man, we'd hang out with Roger. Roger would be,
I don't think I don't we would have been
friends
with Roger.
He'd be like Big Brother Roger.
Big Brother Roger. Clean up your room, Carl.
I'd be like, come on. Yeah, 15. Oh, man, I was getting into disco at that time.
Oh, boy, here we
had
go.
Had my disco.
Ball and yeah, your Italian horn.
Had my incense.
And
my heel shoes.
Had my incense in my basement.
That he still wears.
Had
a,
I had my lava lamps.
And he's still living in the basement.
Oh, gosh, those were the days.
Lava lamps are very big right now. They're back in.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're sold all over the place again.
I'll be a son of a gun.
I'll be a son of a gun.
So what? I was a sophomore in high school, I guess.
What, 15?
15, right?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Freshman?
Six,
yeah.
Six?
Yeah, sophomore.
Freshman at 16.
Sophomore. No, I was a sophomore. No. I was sophomore at 15.
Sophomore 15?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Wait a minute.
Wow.
18 is senior.
Gosh.
You
I'm
could
old.
Be 17.
Come on.
It depends when your birthday hits.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
All right, Roger, are you enjoying this Dimension X
Dimension
broadcast?
X.
All right, let's tune it in. Here's the conclusion to the report on the Barnhouse effect on Dimension X.
Barnhouse was gone. Within 12 hours, the world was on a spree. The headlines were glorious or terrible, depending on what you think of the things the way they are.
Hey, Barnhouse flattens helio bomb factory!
Dynamo psychic waves reached every corner of the world. In every country, every continent flashed the news of what was happening.
Hey, Barnhouse knocks out hidden atomic stockpile in Asia.
There was a new kind of war, the war of tattletales. Secret agents of every country hunted for the hidden armaments of their enemies, yelled about them in the newspapers, and immediately there'd be that warning burst of Barnhouse static, followed by...
radio-controlled fleet blown up on secret maneuvers.
The professor was out to make peace or bust, and nothing like him ever was. Look, Major Cuthrell, I told the FBI and the Army everything I know weeks ago. I've answered questions till I'm blue in the face.
I didn't come here to ask questions, Clinton. I came to ask for your help.
My help?
That's right. Find Barnhouse.
What if I don't want to?
If you're his friend, I think you'd better.
Why pick on me? You've got the FBI, the police, and Army intelligence. Why can't you find him yourself?
We're trying. But you know the man well. You could spot him where we wouldn't. And you're the only one who can.
Maybe. But why should I? Wherever he is, I think he's doing fine. He's making war impossible, and I like it.
So do I.
Yes? He's putting you out of a job.
That's all right with me. I'll retire to a truck farm with pleasure.
Well, then?
Look, Clinton, we aren't the only ones in this race. Every country in the world has its best agents out hunting for Barnhouse. Nobody can beat that kind of a manhunt.
He seems to be doing all right so far.
Sure, but how long do you think he can keep it up? A week? A month? Sooner or later, he'll be spotted. And if the wrong people find him, Clinton, we're done for. You know what kind of weapon this is. Whoever controls the Barnhouse effect can control the world.
Well, all right. Suppose they do find him. He'd never give the secret away.
Never give it away? Are you out of your mind? You think these fellows are playing for marbles?
Well, no, but...
Read the papers, Clinton. Don't you know what's going on in the rest of the world?
Yes,
they'll get the secret out of Barnhouse, all right. What happens to him in the process won't be very pretty.
Well, he must realize that, then. He'll never let himself be taken alive.
He may not have the choice. And if he doesn't, God help us all.
All right. All right, I'm in.
Good. Now... do you know anything that you haven't told us? Anything that might give us a lead?
Only this. It was addressed to me. I found it here on his desk the morning after he escaped.
You mean he came back here?
Yes. I guess he needed to pick up some personal effects. Anyway, the files were open, and he left this note on a scrap of paper.
Anything to do with the Barnhouse effect?
Read it yourself. It's Greek to me. Just these few lines scrawled on a piece of paper, and the last one breaks off right in the middle of a sentence.
This stuff doesn't make any sense at all. You know, from the looks of this, I'm beginning to wonder if the professor isn't going off his rocker.
I thought of that, too.
All the more reason why we've got to get to him quick. He may be helpless, and the whole world's on his track. Come on, Clinton. We haven't much time.
You say you do recognize this photograph, Mrs. Reardon?
I tell you, it looks like Mr. Balfus. He had the second floor front room for quite a while, but
He left, I should say, about a week ago. Say, is he wanted for something?
Yes, if he's the man I think he is.
Well, now, I'd say you're looking for the wrong fella. That Mr. Balfour, he couldn't be a criminal. Why, he wouldn't even harm a fly. He spent all his time in his womb, just thinking.
Brother, it's hot. What a way to spend an August afternoon, huh, Major? Give my eye teeth to be at Jones Beach.
So would I, Corporal. We've got work to do here.
Look, sir, we've been cruising around these radio detection cars for a week. Not a sign of Barnhouse static. The professor must have run out of things to work on.
Well, we'll give him a little more time. Switch to shortwave. See if there's anything special coming through.
Yes.
Try the 9-meter wave.
Radio Miranda calling.
Let's hear that.
Our American enemies who have hidden behind the unjust and diabolical persecution by Professor Arthur Barnhouse will tyrannize us no more.
I wonder if the professor's out of
this. Our glorious leader takes up his residence in a shelter, shielded with lead against all dynamo psychic rays. With his protection designed by our brilliant scientists to be absolutely impregnable against the Barnhouse effect, he will once again lead us on the path of our glorious death.
Triangulate it and get me a fix. I've got it. Let me check this chart. Quick, man.
3.9, 1.7.
Oh, my aching back.
What is it?
We haven't got a prayer of finding a major. He'd have to be picked out of 2 million people.
Where is Barnhouse?
Right where I was wishing I was. Right smack in the middle of Jones Beach.
Gents, we're full. No more rooms tonight.
We don't want a room. Do you recognize this picture?
Who wants to know?
Uncle wants to know.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Yeah, let me see it. Yeah, it looks a lot like room 417.
About 5'8", thin, sandy hair, yeah. Glasses, little scar right across the bridge of his nose.
Yes, 417, all right.
You mean he's here now?
No, not anymore. He checked out 2 days ago. But he couldn't have gone far.
What makes you say that?
Oh, he looked sick as a dog. Couldn't hardly carry his own bag out.
Uh-oh.
Like I said to the other fellas, I said he looked like he was on his way to the moor.
What other fellas?
Oh, they were the ones this morning. You're the second pair that's been asking for him.
Here we are. Ward 15. This way, gentlemen.
You're sure he's here, nurse?
Oh, yes.
Thank heaven we're in time.
Well, I wasn't on duty when he came in, but one of the other girls told me he'd collapsed in the street. The ambulance brought him in.
Poor guy, he must have really had it rough.
Oh, here you are. Bed number 78. This is your man.
Wait a minute. This isn't Barnhouse?
But I was perfectly sure. Oh, wait, let me check his chart. Dismissed 8 p.m.
Only an hour ago.
Oh, dear, now I remember.
Remember what? If he was sick, why did you let him go?
Well, two of his friends came and took him away. They didn't want him in the charity ward. They said they'd make sure that he was taken care of.
Every time I walk into this study, I keep hoping somehow I'll wake up out of a bad dream and find the professor just sitting here. Major, is there anything we haven't covered?
Nothing. The police, the FBI, the air patrol, the docks, the railroad stations, everything. Not even a flea could get through this dragnet, I hope.
Then I guess we sit.
We sit. Maybe something will come in. You have to roll those dice.
I'm sorry. I wasn't thinking.
An hour. That's what's driving me crazy. 1 hour sooner and he'd have been in our hands, not theirs.
I know. Well, maybe he's still all right.
How can he be all right? He's in the hands of a foreign power.
We don't know that for sure. The professor was a likable little duck guy. He couldn't have lasted this long if he hadn't found some friends. Maybe they came and took him away.
Well, I... Grab that.
Hello? Yes?
Clinton, is that you?
Professor Barnhouse.
Clinton... They've got me.
Who's got you? Where are you, Professor?
I don't know. They said something about taking me to an airport.
An airport? Which one?
Listen, Clinton. I've got to tell you. The Inkwell.
What are you talking about?
Remember the Inkwell?
Professor. Professor Barnhouse. Operator.
Operator.
Your call, please.
Operator, that call that just came in here. Can you trace it?
I'm sorry, sir, but I'm afraid it's too late. Your party has been disconnected.
Where are we headed? He didn't say which airport, just a hunch. The commercial airfields are all covered. But there's a little private field out here, I remember. Hasn't been used in years.
Better be the one.
They didn't have too much of a start on us. Maybe we'll make it in time. Step on it, Corporal.
Wide open, Major.
How'd he sound? Did he say who had him?
No, all he got out was airport and something about an
Major,
airport.
Mr. Clinton, there's a tail light up ahead. Must be another car going like the devil.
You're right, I see it.
They're turning into the airfield. Come on, faster.
Hold everything.
Look up ahead.
They're switching the floodlights on at the field.
There's the plane down at the other end, all warmed up and ready to go.
We'll never make it on the road. Hang on, I'm going through the fence.
Right. Well, what's the matter? Get going.
Sorry, sir. Must have cracked the axle.
They're taking off. Get out the submachine gun.
You can't. Barnhouse is in that plane. You'll kill him.
We've got to take that chance.
That plane's headed straight for us. Hit the dirt!
Get that gun working, Corporal. Aim for the propeller.
Couldn't get him, Major.
Well, there goes the old ball game.
I'll get through to air patrol, sir. Maybe they can intercept the plane.
No, not a chance. By the time the fighters got off the ground, the plane would be out of range. No, we've lost, Barnhouse. Nothing can save us now.
Hey, what? What hit me?
Clinton, are you all right?
Yeah, sure. The plane. It's gone.
I know. Barnhouse blew it right out of the sky. He wouldn't let himself be taken alive.
Boy, he really did it the hard way.
Poor guy. He shouldn't have had to be a hero. All he ever wanted was peace.
Peace?
What's that? Now the arms race will start all over again. And with Barnhouse gone, what's left to stop it? So they brought me back here to the professor's old study to dictate this report. I'm sitting here at his desk, and it's just the way he left. Papers all over, even his old pair of dice. Arthur Barnhouse is dead. That's going to be good news for some people when they find out. The saber rattlers of the world will be busy as of tomorrow morning getting ready to whoop up another war. I'm afraid they're in for a little surprise. 3 a.m. now. Before morning comes, I intend to vanish, disappear completely. That's the last that anybody will ever see or hear of me directly. That's why I want to tell you now. I've been looking at the new inkwell here on the desk. The professor's last words were something about an inkwell. And in it, I found a little scrap of paper. Just a few words, but they complete the note I showed the major. The note that didn't make any sense. The whole thing makes sense now. Professor Barnhouse may be dead, but you haven't heard the last of the Barnhouse effect. Not yet. I've been experimenting while I've been talking to you, and now the time has come for me to say goodbye. You see, I've just rolled my 50th consecutive 7.
You have just heard Report on the Barnhouse Effect by Kurt Vonnegut, Jr. An adventure in time, space, and the unknown. Dimension X. Next week, the strange story of the interspace rocket Star Cloud, which vanished mysteriously behind the Great Galactic Barrier in the year 1986. What happened to it and to its crew? We'll tell you next week. Tonight's story, Report on the Barnhouse Effect, was adapted for radio by Clarice A. Ross.
Featured in the cast were Bill Quinn as Clinton, Ed Jerome as Professor Barnhouse, and Carl Weber as Major Cuthrell. Your host was Norman Rose. Music, Albert Berman. Engineer, Bill Chambers. Dimension X is produced by Van Woodward and directed by Edward King. Tomorrow, hear Sam Spade. Now, it's Truth or Consequences on NBC.
That's Dimension X, April 22nd, 1950, with a report on the Barnhouse Effect by Kurt Vonnegut Jr., and that was hosted by Norman Rose. Bob Hastings was in that episode, along with Bryna Rayburn, and we had, let me see who else, Santos Ortega on that show as well. All right, I hope you enjoyed that as heard on NBC. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. You know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
We have almost concluded hour two of our three-hour show for Saturday going into Sunday evening. And then when we come back here tonight at 11 p.m., we will have three more classic radio shows. We'll have Boston Blackie, then we'll have the Eddie Cantor Show, and then Cabin B 13, Good Mystery. Coming up in our next hour, in our 1 to 2 a.m. hour, we have The Whistler. You don't want to miss The Whistler. And didn't you see something at Goodman Theater that you just have been nonstop talking about?
I can't stop thinking about this show. And I'm telling you, if you've ever heard me talk about a show on this radio program, this is one of my favorite shows I have seen this entire year. Without question, this is the first show of the opening season of Goodman this year, and it's A View from the Bridge. So this is Ivo Van Hove's revival of Arthur Miller's...
Ivo Van Hove, that's the guy's name?
It's Ivo Van Hove.
Girl or guy?
It's a guy.
Okay,
director.
He directed it?
He did. So he revived Arthur
What's
Miller's...
What's his name?
Ivo.
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 E-V-O?
It's I-V-O.
Okay, I-V-O. Okay.
Okay, Van Hove. Okay. H-O-V-E.
All right.
Okay. So this is Arthur Miller. They call it a modern-day Greek tragedy. It's running through October 15th. You can get more information at goodmantheater.org. But just to give you, I can't give you a brief synopsis.
Let me tell you
just
what happens.
Too much.
I think I know what
well,
happens.
Well, we've talked about it a little bit, but I could not but help talk about this show all week.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Tell me what happened.
I kind of think I know this play.
You know this play.
Well, because I think he wrote this play while he was dating or engaged to Marilyn Monroe.
He was in a relationship with her when he wrote this play.
Okay, so I'm right on that.
Okay,
it's
so
called a,
think about this.
What
he
is
was
it
an
called?
Older man.
A View, what?
A View from the Bridge.
Yeah, A View from the Bridge.
He was an older man.
Yeah.
Dating a younger woman,
right.
Which that comes into play in terms of a family drama.
And he worked
theme.
Like in the steel mills or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, it was the Brooklyn Docks.
And so this is sort of almost about his own life. It's almost autobiographical, right?
This is somewhat. I mean, this really does push the limits. We've got some sexuality that's bordering on immoral.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to go too deep into it. That's the part that I really like. It made me
Lisa's twisted.
I'm a little twisted, but it made me very uncomfortable, and I really appreciate
well,
that.
Yeah, because you're seeing a play, and you want to be kind of
this the lead of the show. His name is Eddie Carbone. He raised his sister's daughter.
Well, that's
so
the that's character his, in the lead
character.
Okay.
The lead character.
Yeah.
And he absolutely fell in love with this girl and he raised her.
Yeah.
And the relationship was not a normal one.
Okay.
There's another theme about illegal immigrants who moved from Italy to get a better life. And there
right.
were a lot of issues with that. But here's the other thing I just want to tell you briefly. There's no props. There's no set. There's no shoes. There's no accents of the immigrants. It's just raw and bare. It's just the words and the physicality of the actors. That's all we have. I loved it. I can't say enough about it. Please check out A View from the Bridge at Goodman Theater. It's running through October 15th.
I think I want to see it.
I would love
I
to have
really
you see it.
I don't really like going to plays that much.
It's my favorite show of the year, if that means anything
it.
To
if
you.
If it's your favorite show, then I have to go see it.
Opening show of Goodman Theater's season.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, hour three. Thanks for staying up late with us, folks. And in this hour, it's The Whistler, starring Bill Forman as The Whistler in Money is the Root of All Evil from 1948. And it's brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming comedy A Bad Mom's Christmas, a sequel to the 2016 film Bad Moms.
All right.
And the winner's going to get a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
Excellent. 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress played Betty Davis in Feud.
Cut back on the lipstick. You're playing a recluse who hasn't seen the sun for 20 years.
All right. Who is that great actress? 312-981-7200. Give us a call. We'll find our winner after these words.
We're back. Phew. This is the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Cut back on the lipstick. You're playing a recluse who hasn't seen the sun for 20 years.
What a great actress.
She certainly is. Gosh. We've got Connie on the line. Hey, Connie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Fine.
Good, good. Who is that actress?
It is one of my favorite actresses, Susan Sarandon.
Susan Sarandon is right. Do you watch Feud? I know Carl talks about it all the time.
Sometimes, yes, I do.
Yeah, I've seen a couple
of
episodes.
It was a 10-part
series. I know, you have to go with it.
It was
with
great.
The flow here.
All right. And then Jessica Lange played... Right.
Betty.
Do you remember Betty? Joan Crawford?
Joan Crawford, yeah.
Do you remember her from Tootsie?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
She was, it was just something else.
She was great.
She just, anyhow, Connie, you are a winner. You have won a Twilight Zone 4 CD set produced by Carl and hosted by none other than the great Stacey Keach. So we hope that you enjoy that. It's terrific.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Connie.
Great to hear from you.
Thanks for staying up late with us, my friend. All right. It is, let's see, it's 1:15 in the morning, and it's time for The Whistler. This was a great mystery series, premiered in 1942, and the best thing about it was there was always a twist at the end of the story. One of the best mystery shows of all time. Nearly 700 episodes were produced. It ran all the way to 1955. Started in 42, lasted till 1955. And you had great supporting characters in this, like Jack Webb, Gerald Moore, Elliot Lewis, William Conrad. This particular episode is from February 11th, 1948. It's called Money is the Root of All Evil. Here is part one now of The Whistler.
The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
I am The Whistler. And I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. Rated tops in popularity for a longer period of time than any other West Coast program in radio history. And now The Whistler's strange story. Money is the root of all evil.
Some people spend more time scheming how to get money dishonestly than it would take to earn it honorably. Frank Davidson was one of these. For years, he'd been building an alibi to cover his many dishonorable activities by telling everyone who'd listen that money was the root of all evil. At the same time, he was scheming to get as much money as he could from his uncle George Davidson, who had not only built a fortune, but had also accumulated the love and respect of his fellow citizens. Yes, in bettering himself, George Davidson had likewise helped thousands of others comfortably employed in various Davidson enterprises. As purchasing agent for the Davidson Manufacturing Company, Frank Davidson was in a favorable position to add, through shady and illegitimate means, substantial sums to the liberal salary his uncle paid him. He'd been getting away with this grafting for years until he clashed with Jim Duran, the city's most ruthless racketeer and gangster.
You know, Davidson, you're a pretty smart boy.
Oh?
A lot smarter than people around town think you are. You must net yourself a pretty neat little sum every month.
You're crazy, Duran. The commissions I get...
Commissions? That's pretty cute. I love the way you keep calling that dough you steal commissions.
Well, they are commissions. As buyer for the Davidson Manufacturing Company, I consider every bid that comes in.
Now, quit kidding, Davidson. For the last 2 years, you've been buying second and third rate cement, plaster, and steel. Your uncle's been billed for grade A prices. You've been pocketing the difference as a kickback from the fellas you've been dealing with. I don't think your uncle would like it at all if he knew what you were doing.
Well, I can't figure where it concerns you, Duran.
Everything that happens in this town concerns me. Besides, I don't like guys that give all their business to my competitors.
Competitors?
Sure. A couple of months ago, I formed a new company, the Mid-City Service Corporation. We're a sort of a buying and selling agency. We buy and sell steel, cement, plaster, practically everything that Davidson Manufacturing Company uses.
Look, Duran, I don't make enough to split.
I think you do. And I'll tell you why. First of all, your salary's $6,000 a year. And for a guy making $6,000 a year, you cover a lot of territory. In October, you drop $700 in 1 week at Eddie Sansoni's. During November, you drop the G.
Eddie said he'd keep his mouth shut.
Eddie works for me. For Christmas, you gave your girlfriend, Helene Franklin, an $1,800 convertible. Last week, you gave her a $1,000 engagement ring. Yeah. You sure do okay for a guy making $6,000 a year.
All right, Duran, so I do okay. Where do you come in?
Now, that's simple. We'll handle your deals for you. We'll take care of everything for, say, $150 a week. But retroactive for 6 months.
You're out of your mind.
You've been buying for my competitors a lot longer than that.
But I'd owe you $3,900 in back money.
Sure. But look how safe you'll be. If anything goes wrong, you won't appear at all. You can just say you had reason to believe the Mid-City Service Corporation was okay.
But I can't raise that kind of dough.
What's the matter with the old man?
My uncle?
Yeah, he's a nice old guy. Takes pretty good care of you, from what I hear.
Yeah, but he'd never give me an amount that big without a reason.
Give him a reason. Tell him you lost it at Eddie Sansoni's. Tell him Eddie's got your IOUs and he's going to give them to the newspapers or something. The old man will hate to have a scandal. Besides, it'll be a good investment for him. We furnish protection, too.
Protection?
Yeah. We'll make sure no accidents happen to his employees. Especially his purchasing agent. Oh, one more thing. See that your uncle don't find out about this deal. He might take a notion to talk to the police or somebody. That'd be pretty unhealthy for you.
Well, Frank, when you began your double dealing, you didn't dream you'd be interfering with the activities of Jim Duran, did you? Duran knows everything about you, doesn't he? And from now on, he wants in. And you know he's going to expect that $3,900 a week from Friday. You'll have to talk to your uncle about this, won't you, Frank?
All right, Frank. Let's have it. What's wrong now?
Well, you're not going to like it, Uncle George. But it's the same old thing. I need money. $3,900. Now, there's no use beating around the bush. I owe it to Eddie Sansoni.
Sansoni? The gambler?
That's right.
And now you expect me to get you out of this difficulty as I have a dozen others. You know, Frank, you have an idea that because I happen to have earned a good deal of money, it's your job to spend it.
Why not? What else is money for?
Oh, but you're wrong, Frank. You're terribly wrong. Money is a trust, a very serious trust. Wisely used, it makes for a better community. And I'm certainly not going to give you $3,900 to hand over to a crooked gambler.
But, Uncle George, listen, you don't get it. The man I owe is Eddie Sansoni. He's a killer. I've only got till next Friday to pay up.
Nonsense, nonsense. Just tell the police.
You mean you won't let me have the money for Sansoni?
Naturally not. Why, it would be the worst thing I could do for you, Frank. And another thing, and this is for your own good. Beginning Monday, you're going to work in the factory. This job as purchasing agent hasn't done you any good.
Now, wait a minute, Uncle George. If you're going to leave me the business anyway...
I'm not going to leave you the business. If I did, there wouldn't be any business in 5 years.
But you always said it would all be mine someday. Why, even in your will...
I'm changing my will, Frank. Just as soon as my lawyer returns from Washington next week.
You mean you're cutting me out of your will permanently?
Well, that depends. Maybe I'll change my mind in a year or two if you'll really settle down. And I hope you will, Frank. Meantime, I owe it to the employees and the people who put their savings into this business to protect their interests.
An unpleasant morning, isn't it, Frank? So unpleasant, you quickly leave the office and go to see your girlfriend, Helene. After all, Helene understands you. And like you, she believes that money is the root of all evil. That is, other people's money. You tell her about Duran, about Uncle George cutting you out of his will, all your difficulties. Helene is not only sympathetic, she's very practical, too.
But your uncle can't do a thing like that, cutting you out of his will of all the dirty...
He's doing it. Just as soon as his lawyer gets back from Washington.
When will that be?
Sometime next week.
Wow. He hasn't cut you out yet, Angel.
Oh, what difference does that make? He won't change his mind.
Oh, a lot of things can happen in a week, honey.
Such as...
Take a look at that headline in tonight's paper.
Hmm? Wealthy playboy slain in love nest. I don't get you.
Suppose your uncle had a little love nest, baby.
The closest thing Uncle George has to a love nest is his little cabin out at Clear Lake where he goes to rest up occasionally. And as far as girls are concerned, he doesn't even know they're alive.
Well, he's got a secretary, hasn't he?
Of course.
Well, from what you say, he pays her a lot of dough.
Naturally, she's been with him a long time. Besides, Bill Lawton, her husband, was very badly hurt in an accident a while back and hasn't been able to work since.
From what you've told me, Bill's not very happy about it.
Mary says he's miserable.
Well, suppose Bill Lawton were to think your uncle's interest in Mary was, something more than just paternal?
In the mood he's in, you'd probably see headlines bigger than the... Helene, I think you've hit on a wonderful idea. A wonderful idea. Except it takes time.
A week's a long time, Frank. When it's all you've got.
Yeah, it is at that. And this is one time I'm gonna move fast.
With the prologue of Money is the Root of All Evil, the Signal Oil Company is bringing you another strange story by The Whistler.
Well, Frank, Helene gave you quite an idea, didn't she? It would certainly make things easy for both of you if Bill Lawton got the wrong idea about his wife, Mary, being involved with your wealthy Uncle George and killed him in a fit of jealous rage. No one could pin anything on you either. After your years of hypocritical preaching that money is the root of all evil, you're sure nobody would ever connect you with your uncle's sudden death. But you know you'll have to act fast, plant the seed of suspicion in Bill Lawton's mind. So a few moments after leaving Helene's apartment, you're in Bill Lawton's living room.
Well, Bill, how are things going?
Okay.
I guess it gets pretty lonesome sitting around the house all day, huh?
Oh, I manage.
Yeah, I know how it is.
Trouble is, I can't keep living on Mary's dough. I didn't marry her to get myself a meal ticket.
Well, if Mary doesn't object, why should you?
It's up to me to be working, not her.
Well, I wouldn't worry too much about it, Bill. After all, my uncle's pretty generous to her.
Yeah, no. He's a nice old guy. But I'll feel a whole lot better when I'm paying the bills.
Now, don't worry. Uncle George always gets his money's worth.
I know. Mary's a pretty terrific secretary.
And a pretty neat addition to the office, too. I don't blame Uncle George for keeping her to himself.
Yeah. It's been awfully busy down there lately, hasn't it?
Busy? Nothing. It's practically dead. Oh, but then things always slow up this time of year.
Dead? But Mary's been working overtime 2 nights last week.
She had? Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, wait a second. Besides being purchasing agent, you're sort of an all-around assistant to your uncle, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, if he works late, how come you don't know about it?
Oh, well, I'm out calling on clients most of the time.
I don't get this deal about Mary working nights when things are so slow.
Well, as far as that's concerned, I don't either. But then Uncle George does a lot of things he doesn't tell me about. Don't worry about it, Bill. Listen, why don't you come into town for lunch someday soon? It'll do you good.
Frank.
Yeah?
Is there anything between your uncle and my wife?
What? What on earth made you think of a thing like that?
I've been thinking about it for quite a while.
He's been thinking about it for quite a while, Lisa.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
That's the Whatever Whistler. You say. Part one of The Whistler, with money as the root of all evil. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. But first, these words. You know, a little later tonight, Lisa, when we're done, Dave Plyer will be in here, and he's going to be speaking with Alan Alda. You want to talk about a legend right there? I mean, Alan Alda.
You know, he speaks to legends every single week. I don't know how
he speaks
does
to
it.
Us every single
exactly.
Saturday and Sunday.
Exactly. Here we are. We're legends right. in our own minds.
In our own minds. Yeah. But yeah, Alan Alda.
Yeah.
Dave Plyer gets the best. He gets the best people to talk to.
Yeah, I think he pays them off.
Yeah. He bribes
them. He tells them if they come in a little early, they can see us. So it's
That's
worth it.
That's it. I knew it had to be something.
Yeah.
But Dave does such a great job. I mean,
he does
a great job. He's always talking to the biggest names, the biggest legends. And there you go. He has Alan Alda from MASH. And I mean, Alan Alda was in a million things.
Yep. Gosh, a million.
I love him.
I want you to name them.
All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How much time do you have?
I've got plenty.
Well,
of time.
We have time for the. It's time for the
you
news.
You can do it while the news is on.
Yeah, I'll do it while
sure
the news is on.
You can name all
at
million,
least a million
while I'm doing the news.
Yeah.
I'll do a half a million, and then I'll do the other half a million.
Okay. Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, let's get back now to this February 11th, 1948 episode of The Whistler.
Well, you've planted the seed, Frank. You've set Bill to wondering in earnest about your Uncle George and his wife, Mary. And now you must nurture that seed so it will sprout and grow quickly. The next day, Bill himself makes it easy for you.
Frank Davidson speaking.
This is Bill Lawton. Frank, you busy?
I'm not too busy to talk to you, boy. What's on your mind?
Could you run out to my place for a few minutes?
Well, I guess so, if it's important.
It's important to me.
Okay, fella, I'll be right out.
You know what he wants, don't you, Frank? And you're sure you've got all the answers, the right answers. You're sure of yourself. Please, too, as you reach for your hat. And then your phone rings once more.
Hello, Frank Davidson speaking.
You know who this is, Frank?
Yes, it's Jim...
Never mind the name. Thought I told you not to mention our little conversation to your uncle.
I didn't, Jim, honestly. I told him exactly what you told me to tell him.
Now, that's funny. A couple of guys with badges came over this morning and asked to see the books of the Mid-City Service Company.
Well, I didn't have anything to do with it.
I hope not. For your sake. If you did, it's going to be too bad for you.
Duran? Hello? Duran?
Leaving your office following Duran's phone call, you know you have to move fast. You're sure if your plans go through, you'll have no trouble stalling off Duran until you come into control of your uncle's fortune. And as you enter Bill Lawton's apartment and note the grim expression on his face, you're equally sure your plans for the death of your uncle through Bill Lawton will work. You handle Bill to perfection.
Frank, tell me the truth about your uncle and my wife.
Oh, now wait a minute, Bill. If you
think... I said the truth, Frank.
I'm telling you the truth. As a matter of fact, we were crazy when we even gave a thought to the two nights Mary worked overtime last week. Do you know what? I found out Uncle George wasn't even at the office those nights.
He wasn't? Then what was Mary doing?
Uncle George took out his work to the cabin at Clear Lake. He often does that when he snowed under.
And Mary worked in town?
Naturally. At least, I thought. Where else?
Nice try, Frank. But it doesn't gel. Mary told me she took 40 pages of dictation. If he was at the cabin at Clear Lake, she was too.
Well, now, Bill, maybe you're just jumping at conclusions. Wait a minute, Bill. What are you going to do with that gun?
Nothing right now. Just wanted to be sure it was here and loaded. Next time Mary tells me she's working at night, I'm going to go out to your uncle's cabin at Clear Lake.
Bill, you're nuts.
And if I find what I think I'll find, this gun's going to get quite a workout.
Hi, Bill. I'm home. Oh, hello, Frank. Bill. Bill, what on earth are you doing with that pistol?
He was just showing it to me, Mary.
Oh, guns make me nervous. For goodness sakes, put it back in the desk, Bill. Bill?
Okay, Mary.
Since when have you become interested in firearms, Frank?
I got myself into a jam with Jim Durant. Eddie Sansone.
Jim Durant, that gangster?
I said Eddie Sansone. He's pushing me pretty hard. And, Bill thought that I might need some protection, so he offered me his revolver.
Oh, that's ridiculous, Frank. Why don't you go to the police?
You don't know what you're saying.
Well, at least tell your uncle he's let you have money before.
Money. That's all I ever hear. Sansoni's got plenty, but he wants more. My uncle's loaded with it, and he keeps working. Everybody talks about money. Everybody wants money. It's like I've always said, money is the root of all evil. Well, you take right now, it wouldn't hurt Uncle George to just help me out one more time.
Frank, I don't think you're being very fair. Your uncle's been wonderful to you.
He's been wonderful to you, too, hasn't he, baby?
He's been wonderful to us, Bill.
Oh, now, wait a minute, kiddies. Don't let my troubles upset you. Thanks for offering me your gun, Bill, but I guess Mary's right. Carrying a gun would be silly. I'll see you at the office tomorrow, Mary. So long, Bill.
So long, Frank.
Bye, Frank.
You realize that your big problem now is to get your uncle and Mary together at your uncle's cabin at Clear Lake. And this should be easy. But a day passes, then another, and another. Finally, on the fourth day, half your problem is solved as Uncle George summons you to his office.
Frank, you wouldn't mind dining out this evening, would you?
Well, no, why?
Well, I thought I'd spend the night at the cabin.
Well, that's a good idea, Uncle George. You go ahead. I'll probably do a little work at the office.
Now, Frank, solving the other half of your problem should be very simple. You can play on Mary's loyalty to your uncle and the company, and she'll agree to anything you suggest. So a few minutes after your uncle leaves, you stop at Mary's desk.
Mary, would you mind working with me tonight so we can have that Carson estimate ready in the morning?
Oh, Frank. You know how Bill hates to have me out at night.
Oh, I don't think he'll mind. He understands you have to work overtime occasionally. And I'd hate to see us lose that Carson account.
Okay. Okay, I'll phone him right away.
Oh, that's swell. Thanks a lot, Mary. I'll see you at the office about 7:30, huh?
That was easy, wasn't it, Frank? You can see the expression on Bill Lawton's face when Mary phones about working late. You can even see him hang up the phone, cross the room to his desk, open the drawer and remove his revolver, go out to his car and start for Clear Lake. So you go out for a quick snack, smoke impatiently until 7:30, then go to the office where Mary is waiting for you.
Hi, Mary. I sure do get bad breaks. You won't be able to help me after all.
Now, Frank, don't tell
me... Uncle George wants you to go out to the cabin at Clear Lake right away.
Why? He didn't say anything
about... You got me. All I know is he got a telegram before he left. Then he told me to get in touch with you and tell you to come out right away with your notebook. He says it's very important.
Well, I guess there's nothing else to do.
Uncle George said to use the company car, so I put it out in front for you.
Okay.
Here, here's the keys.
Thank you, Frank. Oh, say, did you hear about Jim Durant being arrested?
No, I didn't. Is he in jail?
No, he's out on bail. Well, see you tomorrow, Frank. Hope you get that Carson estimate out all right.
Don't worry, everything will be taken care of tonight. It has to be.
Well, there it is, Frank. The last detail fitted into place. But you have to make certain there are no mistakes. You hurry out to your own car, pick up Helene, and head toward Clear Lake. Your car roars past Mary's car within a few miles, and you leave her behind. Suddenly, your heart almost stops beating. Other headlights following you along the highway. Jim Durand. It must be Jim, out on bail, and you're sure he's out to get you. But if tonight goes according to plan, you'll have more than $1 million, and Jim Durand will be a problem no longer. You park some 300 yards from the cabin. There's no sign of the other car. You tell Helene to keep the motor running and walk towards the cabin. Halfway there, you spot Bill Lawton's car parked behind a tree with a clear view of the cabin, where Uncle George has already turned on the lights. All you need do now is wait for Mary to arrive. And then her husband, Bill Lawton, will do the rest. And you haven't long to wait. Mary steps down from the company car and walks rapidly to the cabin and enters the open door. Your heart beats quickly as you watch Bill open the door of his car, slip out without a sound, walk slowly to the cabin and enter the open door. For a moment, everything is quiet. Then you hear the sounds you've been waiting for.
Bill! Bill, what are you doing here?
When you hear the shots from Bill's gun, you're sure your worries are behind you, aren't you, Frank? Tomorrow you'll be head of Davidson Enterprises. You can marry Helene, pay off Durand. Your lies about your Uncle George and his secretary, Bill Lawton's wife, work like a charm, assuring him and arousing him to the jealous fury culminating in the shooting you've just heard. You're almost jubilant as you run to your car, tell Helene the good news, and step on the gas. A moment later, you feel differently. That strange car is right behind you again. Now you're sure it's Durand, the gangster who believes you're responsible for his arrest. You want to stop, explain things, but you're afraid. And you're sure that once he knows of your uncle's death, you can handle him. You've got to get away. You press down on the gas.
Why so fast?
That car behind us, Helene. It's Durand.
Oh, how do you know?
I just know, that's all.
Soon you're doing 50, then 60, then 70, then 75.
Be careful, Frank! Slow down that curve! Frank, look out!
Where am I?
In the Davidson Memorial Hospital. And you're going to be all right.
How about Helene, the girl who was with me?
She's pretty badly hurt, but she'll recover. And we hope that plastic surgery may help her face.
Hello, Davidson.
Huh? Who are you?
Chief of Police Roberts. Lucky for you, we were following you last night when you had that crash. If we hadn't been, you and your girlfriend would be dead pigeons.
You mean it wasn't Durand?
No, it was the police, all right. You talked too much the day Mary Lawton came home and found you and her husband fooling with that gun. She tipped us off. We've been tailing you ever since, for your own protection. Incidentally, Bill Lawton told us how you tried to get him to kill your uncle with your lies about him and Mary.
Kill my uncle? That's insane. Just because Bill Lawton might have gotten mixed up on something I said doesn't mean a thing. It's his word against mine. In a few days, I'll be president of the Davidson Manufacturing Company. You'll be...
Wait a minute. I've got a little surprise for you. You come in, please.
Uncle George.
Yes, Frank. Uncle George.
But I thought...
Yeah, you thought they were dead, didn't you?
But those shots...
They were quite harmless. Blanks. Mary substituted. If she hadn't, we wouldn't be here.
Yes, Davidson, that phony alibi you tried to build, that line about money is the root of all evil, isn't going to get you out this time.
It's too bad you never understood the right use of money, Frank.
You're like a lot of others, Davidson, belittling money, success, misquoting.
Uncle George, you taught me to believe the Bible. The Bible says money's the root of all evil.
No, Frank, no. The Bible says that love of money is the root of all evil, not money itself. There's a difference, Frank. A big difference. That whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Wednesday night at this same time. Brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil and fine quality automotive accessories. Signal has asked me to remind you, to get the most driving pleasure, drive at sensible speeds, be courteous, and obey traffic regulations. It may save a life, possibly your own. This is Marvin Miller speaking. This is CBS, where 99 million people gather every week. The Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is WGN, where 99 million people gather every week. The WGN Radio Theater.
If only.
That is The Whistler from February 11th, 1948. Money is the root of all evil. Bill Forman doing the hosting chores on that, sponsored by Signal Oil, as heard on CBS.
WGN Radio and WGN TV have partnered with the American Red Cross to help victims of Hurricanes Harvey and Irma. Text Red Cross to 90999 to donate $10 or go to redcross.org to donate more.
Hey, you know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
See what I have here in my hands?
I see Nostalgia Digest.
Yeah, so our schedule is now printed in the Nostalgia Digest. This magazine has been around for over 40 years. I've been reading it for almost 40 years. Do you know that?
No, and I just happened on it just, I don't know, within the year, maybe 6 months ago or so. I was in an office, and I saw it sitting there, and I looked through it. And I remember I took a picture of the cover and said, do you know this magazine?
Oh, yeah, I know this magazine.
That we really need to get together.
Well, you know, when I first got interested in classic radio shows, it was from my, I spent the night at my friend's father's house, and he played an episode of Suspense. And the episode of Suspense that I heard, my very first show, is available to all of our listeners free. You can digitally download it at classicradiostore.com. You'll absolutely love the show. Cary Grant stars in it. It's called On a Country Road. Just go to classicradiostore.com. But when I first got interested in classic radio, I found out that there was a guy on the radio playing classic radio shows. His name was Chuck Shaden. And Chuck developed this magazine, Nostalgia Digest. And now Steve Darnall does Chuck's show, the show that Chuck started. It's now Steve's show called Those Were the Days. And he is now the editor of this magazine. And it's great because it's all about the golden age of radio and TV and movies. And like in this particular issue, Lisa, see this issue?
I don't see it, no.
Al Jolson on the cover. There's articles about Otto Preminger, Elliot Lewis. There's an article about Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
I'm sorry, you can't read anything because Dave Player just turned off the lights.
Dave Player turns off all the lights. He doesn't like lights.
Carl's like eyes are popping. It's like a little cartoon. I see his eyes like popping out of his head.
Sorry, Carl. From now on, we're going to talk to Dave Player like this because he's a vampire.
I saw his eyes like going in and out.
But Dave knows all about this magazine.
I do.
Right? I had it upside down.
I do, yeah. Just Nostalgia
Digest.
Because I put you in the dark.
Because he can't read.
And you've had Steve Darnall on.
He's
your
been
show.
A couple weeks to talk about the band.
We had him not too long ago ourselves. Well,
now he's a fine sponsor.
Well, yeah, you know what's happening is we are part of this magazine now. Our entire schedule is in this magazine. And if you order a one-year subscription to Nostalgia Digest, four big issues, it's $17. But if you order 2 years, you get it for only $30, and you get a Twilight Zone 4-CD set as part of the whole deal. And that's a $27.99 value. It's absolutely free.
That is
a really a bargain.
Yeah,
isn't it
for that magazine? It's like great. So you get 8 issues. It's only $30.
Yeah.
They send them to your home, 8 issues, and you get a Twilight Zone 4 CD set, $27.99.
And dinner with Carl.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's an extra $3-4
if
bucks.
If they're female, he's
yes,
on board.
Yes, yes. Single, preferably.
It doesn't matter.
Alive. It helps if they're breathing.
Breathing,
yeah, breathing
would be
is
good.
Always really good. Yeah, you know, I'm thinking, let me see here. Yeah, that would work. McDonald's, I'll take McDonald's.
We had somebody text in, presumably a woman, who said that she would love to go out dancing with you.
Yeah, ballroom dancing with me.
Nice.
I did a little WGN radio recess at the Fred Astaire studio, Carl wasn't there, but Carl really would like to go there, I think, and learn a little bit of dance.
Well, let me just make sure people know where to get the Nostalgia Digest. You can go to nostalgiadigest.com, nostalgiadigest.com. And here's how you get this. When you order 2 years, you have to note WGN in the ordering instructions there. You have to put that in there, and then Steve will send you the Twilight Zone 4-CD set. But Dave Plyer is here, and he has a big show coming up.
By the way, speaking of which, Carl's got some CDs that I think are going to be stocked at the museum store. We're
going to
start doing
that
next month.
That'd be great.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Tons of classic radio.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
So what is happening? What is going on? What is happening?
Jamie Farr. Jamie Farr.
Alan Alda.
Alan Alda. How do you say that?
Well, because you're thinking of the play Jamie Farr is in.
Larry Linville is going to join us. No,
Jamie Farr is in a play. We've been talking about it.
He is, in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah, Klinger.
Yeah, Klinger, that's right.
But it's the 45th anniversary of MASH, and so we thought we'd talk a little bit about that. And then it's, it was, by the way, very nice, kind words I heard you guys bottom of the half hour. That's very nice.
You're very welcome.
And it's also, he's all into science. I think you remember this right after MASH, he started hosting a show on PBS for like 15, 16 years.
Who was this now?
Alan Alda.
Oh, Alan Alda, yeah.
So he's very much into science.
Oh,
so he's written another book, and it's about science and communication, but it's really about communication in the 21st century. And when you think about kids and Snapchatting and Facebooking, and they never talk to anybody, that interaction that we're so used to growing up with isn't there. So how do you really kind of get that going? So we're going to talk first to him about
that's
that
be
and a little bit about MASH. Yeah
I want to hear about that.
And then Chuck Shaden, as you mentioned, he anything I learned about Riverview, because you and I were born at the same time and you're younger than us, we weren't there at Riverview.
Well, Lisa's only 11 now. I mean,
My parents would talk. My dad used to talk about Riverview.
You never went to Riverview?
No.
It closed in 67.
I went to Kidland.
Well, I was a real little
Kidland,
kid.
I did.
I was like 3 or 4 when I went there, but I do remember going there. And I remember the parachute ride.
Yeah, yeah, I thought we were the same age. You're old, huh?
I'm born in 63.
63, okay. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, 67. But
I just look really young. I just look like I'm 20.
You look debonair. Yeah. Deboner. You look very
used to ride my bicycle to Riverview.
I ride
your wooden bicycle. With the square wheels.
Exactly. Well, you know, here's the thing. It closed in 67, and I really, you know, I learned it all from Chuck, whether it was on this radio show or whether it was in Nostalgia Digest magazine, but I learned all about Riverview through him. And, you know, he talks about the fact that he went for the last time in 67 and all the billboards and signs around the park gave the date of opening in 1968 and it never happened. So people had no idea until after it closed.
Sure.
Like Kiddyland, we got to walk through it again
Kiddyland.
And take
I
pictures.
Millions
and,
of times at Kiddyland.
But you got to say goodbye to some of these places. Mm-hmm. This one you didn't get to. So he's going to talk a little bit about that.
I'm just laughing because that's your new word tonight. Millions.
Millions.
Just millions.
Millions.
99 million. 99
he keeps
million
talking people about the millions of times he does things.
Yeah.
I want him to count them up for me.
Do you know Chris Stolte?
Gosh. Of course. Good.
Both
good
of you
pal.
Do.
Fire,
okay.
Yeah.
But
good pal.
But has he done stuff for you?
Tons.
For? Yeah, that's what I thought.
Tons.
He's been in the city for like 30 years.
In fact, he just was in my last audio Bible.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he played Luke in it. He had a great role in
nice.
That. He's a is he going to be on?
We interviewed him on our other show. We had him
he's
on.
He's a great guy. Say hi for me.
Will do. Will
what
do.
A great actor.
Yeah, he's,
great guy.
He's one of 6 guys that ran into the building in the season finale and had a heart attack walking in, and one of them is going to die, and it's going to be a major character. So we'll see. I don't know if it's him. He won't tell me. You know, this is obviously tightly held, but we're going to talk to him at 4.
I'm trying.
Show. You're exhausted already.
You know, Claire Simon is the casting director for all those great shows, and she and I are good friends. And I've been just trying real hard to get the
a cameo.
I'm trying to get the role of Sophia Bush's boyfriend on the new season.
She's gone.
She's gone. She's not on.
It was Chicago PD, and she
she's not on the show anymore.
I think I don't even know if they had any closure. Well, they might have done.
She'll probably call me now and say I can have
that
role.
She's free. She's free now.
I can have that role.
Yeah. You can come in at any time.
Well, she's not busy now. Maybe she's got more time to devote to
Sophia
a relationship.
Bush not on the show anymore.
She decided that four years or four seasons.
I'm not watching it anymore. Then.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed.
We clearly weren't watching it at all.
Yeah, that was really the only draw for me at this point. But no.
Had her on the show. A couple
I had her
times.
On the show. Yeah.
God, you're lucky.
Carl's
man.
Drooling over here.
I can tell.
You are one lucky. I'll wipe up the slop.
I'll wipe it up. It's okay. It's all right.
I carry a bucket, a jewel bucket.
A bib.
I put it around my
ears. Your head. Now.
Yeah.
Wear it around my ears.
Yeah. But Carl, if you're not going straight home, there are people all over the streets of Chicago
that will go ballroom dancing with me.
Apparently, it's going to take us 44 minutes to get on the Kennedy, according to Roger, to get toward the split. He said, which is not okay, Roger.
Why is that, Roger?
I can't. I'm so sorry.
It goes down to one lane.
So what? The Kennedy?
Yeah.
Is that putting up the signs?
Oh yeah, no. There's a lot of overnight road construction there.
I'm really not okay with that, Roger.
I'm so sorry. Right now,
don't they know we have to drive home?
Heading out to O'Hare right now. It's a 34-minute trip.
Okay, well, it's going down. It was 44 a few minutes ago.
But it goes up and down because it depends on how many roads they have.
Roger, please just say it's going down for me.
I'm putting up. Attention, construction people on the Kennedy. Please open up all lanes. Lisa needs to get home now.
I think they're putting up new signs, and I will tell you, the new signs look like the old signs. So it sounds like a lot of busy work to me, Roger.
Are there any signs that say Dave Plyer on WGN or WGN Radio Theater or anything like that?
Billboards along the way.
We sponsor one of the exits, the what do you call those, Roger? The green.
Oh, the cleanup of this portion of the road is
Gateway
sponsored
green.
By
Grant Deporter's dad. Yeah. Started that. Yeah. Gateway Green. Yeah, that's.
Yeah, it's got those. It's like a leaf. Sign
we're going into 94.
Like
first exit into 94. It's sponsored by. I don't think I've ever seen. You
I
out
just
there
saw
reading.
Alan Alda walk by. He's
Did you?
Coming in.
Yeah, we better get going. All right, and we'll see you guys tonight.
Okay.
All right. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Something about Alexa. Here is Roger with the top stories.